Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sarah Barker with the Independent Home Care Alliance, and today is IHCA Member Moments. Our guest, a member of the Independent Home Care Alliance, Alex Chamberlain, CEO of Easy Living Home Care and Care Management, is with us today to discuss his story about why he decided to get into home care, why he decided to have an independent versus non-franchise agency. And we're just going to see where this conversation goes today. So thank you for being with us, Alex.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
Wonderful. So let's start with the basics. What communities do you serve in the United States? What's your geographic footprint?
Yep. So Easy Living, we were founded in Clearwater, Florida, which is just west of Tampa. So the majority of our company's tenure, I would say, is in Pinellas County, which is in the Clearwater market. And then really over the kind of the last 2 or 3 years, we've expanded into Pasco County, which is the county just north of Pinellas County, and then Hillsborough County, which is the Tampa Bay market. So now we service kind of the Tampa Bay general area.
Wonderful. So what made you get into home care? I know, so you're an entrepreneur. So would you mind sharing with the audience what your journey has been that led you to home care and why you stay in home care, especially considering the last couple of years?
I mean, a few different reasons. I don't want to take up all the time, but I can talk for a while. So I don't want to make it too long of a story. But in short, I would say I kind of grew up in the healthcare space. So my father's a physician. And then my mother is actually the entrepreneur of the family. She started a company called Aging Wisely in 1998 and grew up just helping her do that when I was kind of going through school. And then what's funny, in high school, I went to a medical magnet program. And you kind of had three choices that you could take, which was like an EMT, a CNA, and I forget the third. But I think more girls did the CNA, so I wanted to jump in and do that. So I actually got my CNA license when I was in high school. So I kind of rotated through to where you did your volunteer hours and stuff like that at assisted livings, hospitals, things of that nature. So that was kind of my first toe into home care. And I promised myself, I was like, I'm not doing this. This isn't for me. And went away to college. And I sold boats in college. I worked at a company called Intrepid Power Boats. Loved it. Had so much fun. But graduated in 2008. And nobody was buying boats in 2008. So my job offer that I thought was going to be lined up, ready to go, was gone. And so I call home and kind of say, Mom, what now? And she's like, hey, I'm starting this home care company. Because on her care management side, she was referring out to a lot of home care companies. And she just couldn't find a home care company that provided the level of kind of care and service that she wanted for her clients. And she's like, why don't you come back and help me get this off the ground? And that's where I was like, okay, sure. So, of course, I had my CNA license. So I was a caregiver. I was a scheduler. I was intake and just kind of learned every different position. And truthfully, it was doing scheduling that I fell in love with home care.
Are you serious?
Oh, I loved it. I love the rush. I love the excitement. I love the crisis. And truthfully, at least I would say in 2008, your caregivers, they were so thrilled to have a job. So it was like, thank you so much for giving me work. And then clients would call you and say, thank you so much for bringing, again, caregiver X to my house. I absolutely loved her. And I didn't think there was another job out there where you were kind of rewarded on both ends.
And yeah, so that's really interesting.
The passion.
So you're talking about the reward on both ends. And I've noticed, you know, the last couple of years, a lot of focus on caregivers, right? And, you know, how everybody's stressed out. And I think people are catching on now, but what about the stress that the schedulers feel, right? Because as your experience in 2008, getting the positive from both ends, they also get the negative from both ends, right? When things go wrong. So your experience, I have so many questions for you now that I've heard more about this story. First of all, you're young to be in home care as an owner. Is that an accurate statement in general?
Yeah, I mean, I started obviously right out of college. I was 21, I'm 35 now. So coming up on my 15 years here at Easy Living.
Wow, that's impressive. And now, so your journey, understanding doing every single role in the home care company, how do you think that translates to your ability to successfully run the company now?
I mean, I think it gives you more empathy from the standpoint of I can really relate to what each position goes through, which I think from a managerial standpoint helps. I'm trying to tap more into that from when I even onboard with my administrative team. Definitely from when you onboard caregivers of like, what do they perhaps really want? Like, that's how a lot of our culture was built. Like, I hated knocking on doors blind. Like, try being a 17-year-old kid. Like, why are you here? What am I supposed to do? It's like, again, granted, I was 17, but I'd say a lot of our caregivers are 17. Well, they're 18, but they're still young, right? Like, it's usually first or second job. Again, when you have the career caregiver, that's great, right? But there are fewer of them out there. Most it's CNA is an entry-level position into the healthcare space. So how do you set them up for success when they go to a client's house? How do you facilitate that introduction, right? Like, not every caregiver is going to be an extrovert where they're like, hi, I'm Alex, can't wait to take care of you. They may be an introvert. So how do you still do a successful first visit when that caregiver is naturally shy? Doesn't make them bad at what they do, but they're just going to a different approach. And then same thing goes with like a scheduler, right? Like, where do you get your rewarding from? If you're the one who gets beat up every time that somebody tells you no, or do the positives outweigh when you do that successful staffing? Does that really get you going, right? And that's who you would want for that scheduling role, is somebody who loves kind of putting out the fire versus the person who cries when the fire comes.
So you really have to find the right personality, number one, in that role, right? But then take measures to effectively support that person in that scheduling role. So is there anything specific that you guys do at Easy Living Home Care to specifically support your schedulers?
I think what we really look for is just making sure that when they have the win, we reward it appropriately, which is finding when they do that match consistently, like that's the big kudos, right? Like, that's what we really want to reward, whether that's incentivizing them financially or just party at the office, lunch. Like, it doesn't have to be financially driven, but just making sure that they feel that when they get it right, that that's really what you want. Because we know what does happen, the no call, no shows, the call outs, the tardiness complaint, whatever it may be of managing a business, right? I always kind of joke too, like, if every employee did their job right, like, I wouldn't need a lot of you. So it is job security at that standpoint too, to where it's like we get paid to manage the 20%, and then it's always remembering like 80% of our clients are awesome. 80%
Well,
of
you
our
already
caregivers
admitted you're fueled by chaos. So, like, if everything was going
are
perfectly,
awesome.
it wouldn't be
I think
interesting
that's
to you
all
anymore.
businesses, and that's what I try to circle back to, right? Like, our problems, yes, they're unique, but every business has problems. So we're
So
not alone.
I absolutely love the fact that there's talk all the time about creating a caregiver retention program. What are we doing to celebrate? Which, thank goodness, right, has really become an emphasis over the last couple of years. But you're taking it a step further in your business, and you actually ensure that you're incentivizing and recognizing your schedulers as well. And I haven't heard very many home care agencies talking about doing something like that.
I almost think it's easier with the staff from that perspective. Like, I think caregiver retention is extremely challenging because I kind of believe in the philosophy of, like, I'm sure that you've heard of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I kind of base, we have like our caregiver hierarchy of needs too, to where the foundation of that is consistent, predictable income. And if you're not giving your caregiver that, you'll never be able to move them to those next lever, to those next levels, which I would say is retention. So retention comes after trust building. And I believe that you build trust with a caregiver by doing what you say you're supposed to do. But the biggest thing with caregiver trust is when their client dies or they get pulled off a case for whatever reason, whether it's stupid, such as you didn't take out the trash and the client wouldn't give them a second chance, did you get them other work fast? And if you're able to do that, you build trust with your caregiver that says, hey, Easy Living cares about me. Easy Living knows what I need. And you build that kind of that bottom of that pyramid, which is like security, right? Which is that paycheck. So if you're able to give that caregiver that, then you can build upon that, which is training, retention, engagement. And then last but not least, you'll get that kind of loyalty or those growth opportunities, which is what we do here is as we move them up, those are opportunities to either move into the office from a scheduling position or be a care lead, things of that nature.
So there's career progression. I read an article recently, and there was a survey that was done. I can't remember if it's Home Care Pulse or if it was something else I was reading. But so based on the results, it was saying that, people, caregivers, right? They want to know that there's some sort of advancement opportunity that they can drive towards. I do want to focus more on what you were talking about is consistent pay, right? Or if they get pulled off a client, ensuring that they're going to have a paycheck. Because when you and I had our first meeting, that was something that you talked about. And your entire approach is when you, so you get a caregiver applicant, then they move forward, they have an interview, and so you're just very upfront in asking them, and I don't remember your exact verbiage, but you know that you want to become their primary employer, right? You know that really what they want is, a substantial amount of hours. And so can you explain to the audience your approach to that and how you kind of tell them, I'm sorry, let me back up. So you know their expectations, but you actually partner with them and say that you're going to get them there in the next, a certain amount of time is your commitment to them.
Yeah, so it's still the foundation is kind of what we just call that caregiver hierarchy of needs, which is consistent, predictable income. So we know that the foundation of any job that people do is I provide you with, again, my time, skills, services, and the company pays me money for that. That's the foundation of all jobs, right? So if you're not able to meet that standard, which is what happens in the caregiving business quite frequently, is it's like, oh, let's just recruit. And then you sit on our roster and then you never get paid. And then you wonder why they leave you or they don't answer your phone calls. Like it's very obvious. You're not holding up your end of the bargain. So that's where it's circling back to, okay, then what are the most hours that are appealing to caregivers? So what makes the most sense? Now, again, every little demographic might have their differences, but at least in our area, we found that we do block scheduling and we found that the 9 to 1 is the ultimate shift. It gives caregivers plenty of time to one, just wake up. Not everybody's going to wake up at 6 a.m. and have their alarm set and they're morning people and they want to be at work by 7, right? Like that's just not going to happen. But then they might have kids. So what's our local school drop-off times? We know that the majority of our schools run from 7:05 to 8 a.m. drop-off times. So getting to work by 9 a.m. is completely realistic every single time. So that way we're not even managing tardinesses because when we start our shift time, it just makes it easy. So we try to eliminate some of those fights. And then what we found in the caregiving space is we're not always going to have that dream case, right? Like that 9 to 5, 40 hours a week, Monday through Friday. But what we can do is the majority of our shifts are like 23 hours per week. So that's your Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's 20 hours a week of work. And then you get your hour break for lunch. Then you can go on a second client from 2 to 6. So now that gets you 40 hours per week, that easy living, that gets you your 401k, that gets you your health insurance. Like you start getting benefits when you become that full-time employee. And then our data has shown us you don't call out as much if you're making more than 20 hours a week with us. So then we have that race now to where when we hire you, we have to get you to 20 hours or more as fast as humanly possible, or we put you at risk, or again, the organization at risk, the client at risk of you calling out or moving to another company to where you're going to get whatever hours that you need.
Because
And
at the end of the
so,
day, they need those hours so that way they can make sure that they pay their bills. And if they have children, right, be able to buy groceries, pay for gas, all of the life expenses. So, how did you guys get alerted to even, thinking about looking at what the school times were in your community and, kind of backing into this approach with, recruiting them and then hiring them and then making sure that you're keeping up your end of the bargain. How did that come about?
Well, start with the schools when we started tracking, public school systems publish when their spring breaks are, when Christmas breaks are. And it was having so many call outs on like Martin Luther King Day again for the 100th time. And it's like, why are we walking into call outs when we know the schools are again a huge source for again allowing people to work? That's why it was so big when schools closed with COVID. It's like you just lost the number one babysitter. We started tracking that. So, like, when's Christmas break? And then we could just plan around it. Like, hey, do you have coverage? We can encourage our care partners to get coverage. So we can make sure. And of course, we manage hurricanes here in the States. So when they close schools, it's huge. It's a huge disruption. So it kind of started with that. And then what really hit me was I took a home care webinar. I forget which one. It was a couple years ago. And then they brought out the idea of this block scheduling so that you're not having your schedulers manage essentially like, did all your 8 a.m.s clock in? Did all your 9 a.m.s, 10 a.m.s? Because if your scheduler spends all their time making people or figure out if people showed up to work, they're not scheduling. So if we can have all of our shifts start at the same time, they're only checking clock ins twice a day instead of like 10 times a day. So that's a huge productivity of time. And then it was just talking to our caregivers. And all of a sudden they were like, Alex, that 10 to 2 is the worst schedule we've ever seen because there's nothing we can really do in the morning. And then there's nothing we can do in the evening. So it feels like I'm busy for 8 hours a day, but I'm only getting paid for four. But if I do a 9 to 1, I can still pick up my kids from lunch or school or go to lunch and then do another client from 2 to 6. And then now I have an 8 hour work day and then I'm still home. Or they'll do an 8 to 12 and they'll take an hour break for lunch, 12 to 1, and then they'll work a 1 to 5.
So you
So if
took the
you need
time to ask
mornings or
your caregivers.
evenings, oh, I'm a huge into feedback. Probably 6 years ago, I got tired of guessing. They were all wrong. Like all of my natural ideas are not good. Or at least what I thought. So it's just asking clients and asking caregivers what they want, and then we just try to figure out a way to do it. And we
Right. I
can
mean,
do it
how can you
consistently.
know if a solution that you're trying is even going to remotely hit the mark, right? Unless you're asking, and that happens a lot. I was having a conversation with another member last week, Aaron Stapleton of Queen City, and he is a big advocate for seeking feedback from his staff and his caregivers, right, before they make decisions. Because why keep going down a road, right? And you, the owner, are thinking one thing that is going to be, the solution that fixes all these problems, and then it turns out that everybody else in your company can clearly see that it's not going to work. Why not find that out in the beginning? So, how does that work though? So, you're talking about block scheduling. How does that work in your overall marketing business development piece? Because you're talking about fitting clients, right, into the schedule. So, are you guys just more proactive when you do get a referral, letting them know? Right, when you can staff them versus kind of letting them drive the process more of the schedule.
Yeah, what I've found is really to have a good target client, right? So, like, we've really narrowed down who is our target customer, and we want more of them. So, I've always believed in the philosophy, which is what's kind of funny. Nobody ever wakes up and says, I can't wait to do a bad job today at work. Like, I can't wait to screw up. But yet, we put ourselves in those positions all the time by saying yes to a client. And then we try to find that caregiver that can fit to what the client needs. And I don't know if I can do that or not. But what do I know I can do consistently? Like 80% of the time, it's a 9 to 1 schedule is not a problem for me because it gives me my widest net of caregivers that I can call, right? Like again, you want a 7 a.m. start time? I have to find a caregiver that doesn't have kids or has coverage for their kids every single morning. That's just not realistic with this thing called life. Now, again, if I can then widen my net of caregivers that I can call for a 9 o'clock shift, like that might jump from 80 caregivers that I can call to 160 caregivers that I can call. Out of all those phone calls, the odds of me getting that filled are pretty high.
So you may
So it just kind
lose,
of breaks
right?
it down from there. What I found is I haven't lost because clients want the same thing that I want. Like I always joke with clients, we're so aligned with them. I want to have them have the same caregiver every single time, every single day, because then they never call me. They don't complain, they're happy, and then I'm happy. Do I like having to pay my schedulers to find you a new caregiver every single week or every time that there's a call out? Like that's what I call rework. Like I don't like doing the same thing twice. So if our client wants consistency, I tell them how I can deliver that. It's with our block scheduling. It's 9 to 1. And it's Monday through Friday. It's great. If you want weekend care, I like to make it an 8 hour minimum. because you've really decreased your chances of a call out. Because if I party on a Friday night, skipping an 8 to 12 on a Saturday morning is super easy for me to do because I'll just work a double on Monday. Now, again, if it's an 8 hour shift, I'm not going to want to work two doubles. So chances are I'm not going to call out on a good 8 hour shift.
So I think there's several factors at play, right? Is that you know where and how you're able to provide the best service, right? And so much of that has to do with continuity of care, right? Minimizing the call outs and the call offs. And you know what types of schedules really support minimizing those things. And the other piece of that is managing the expectations with the families upfront, letting them know, right? Not trying to hide the fact that, look, if that's what you really want, is this, 7 a.m. start time, the likelihood of continuity is lower. So you're just very transparent in those conversations.
Extremely. I love being so upfront. I like to say, like, a lot of people don't like to see how the sausage gets made, but we all like meat. So it's like I try to tell our clients just, hey, like, here's the realities of what we're working with. Like, I actually just did an intake before I jumped on this call with you, and she wanted shorter shifts, just 2 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the evening. And it's just honest with her. I was like, hey, with gas prices the way they are now, it's just not a good and attractive shift. I was like, I might be able to staff it, but I promise you, when that caregiver leaves your house, they're pulling up Indeed and they're going to find another client, either with my company or with another company that they're signed up with. Now, again, you do Monday through Friday, 9 to 1. I can guarantee you I'll find somebody who wants to work 20 hours a week because that's a good shift. And it gives them time to drop their kids off at school, they go to work, and it gives them time to pick their kids up and then work a second job if they need to, or maybe that's all they need to work. But it's, if you want consistency, here's how I can accomplish that. And what I've found, more often than not, you get the yes. And then I always do the joke that all roads lead back to easy living because you'll get another company that sells them on, sure, we can do that. And then when the revolving door hits, they'll call us back and they'll be like, oh, I see why you did things your way. I'm like,
So that's
thanks.
what I was about to say, Alex, is that, when your families appreciate, and I know this from conversations with families, right? They appreciate that upfront transparency about the reality, right? Because no smoke and mirrors, because it's going to blow up, right? If you're sitting there and say, oh, yeah, we can do this and it's going to be perfect. And then, all of a sudden, service failures start to happen. Versus, you just telling them right up front, sure, if you really, really want us to do this schedule, here's the potential of, the service failures, the potential of that happening increases. But, if you do this schedule, we're going to minimize that and we're going to reach continuity sooner. So let's talk about, okay, so I think that all of us in the industry can agree that by the time a family gets sent to a home care agency, the majority of the time, they don't know what they don't know, right? They may think, I need my mom, right, to have services that starts at 6 a.m. and this is the schedule I need and this is the only way it can be. When in reality, if you really do a thorough intake, and understand the situation, and it's all in delivery and communication, right? Where you can talk to that adult daughter, for example, and say, I know this is what you think the schedule needs to be, but based on what you're sharing with me, the particulars of the situation, this schedule would work, and this is a schedule that I can effectively support. So being a leader for the families, I find that many home care, whoever's doing the assessments from a home care company, are more passive than what they need to be, right? And I firmly believe that families are looking, there's a reason why they're connecting with the home care company and they're looking to you to lead in this situation because it's your area of expertise. And so I encourage the marketer, whoever's doing the assessments, to be confident, right, in making recommendations.
Yeah, like we call it problem solution selling, where truthfully, I don't even ask you for your schedule. So I don't even ask it on the intake call. If they come out with it, I just kind of say, sure. I don't acknowledge anything more than past like an okay, because we'll come out. And then that's so much about what we do too, is I say like we have like a pseudo 20 hour a week minimum to where that's really what we shoot for, because we know that's what caregivers want too. So if you're a 12 hour a week case, that doesn't excite me because now I technically have to find two clients for that caregiver in order for them to be consistent. And that's just hard to do time to time. If it does fall into place, great. Like when. But oftentimes when I do an intake call, I just say yes to everything they say on the phone. And then when we get into the house, that's when I say, okay, here's how we can solve your problems. It's going to be, again, do you want, again, which we do kind of have like a check sheet. So it's like going through our care plan process. It's like, oh, you want bathing, you want dressing. When do you normally eat breakfast? When are your morning meds? And we kind of circle a bunch of things on a form. And then that kind of builds that schedule out for them. So if they need help more in the afternoon, we know it's like a 1 to 5 schedule. If they need more help in the morning, it's an automatic 9 to 1. So we just tell you how we solve your problems without ever asking you.
Because you're the advisor in the situation in many ways,
Oh
right?
yeah, we're the
You
expert, right?
exactly. And I really encourage for those of you listening, right? If you own an independent agency or maybe you're a marketer listening, whoever's doing the assessment, right? Don't be afraid to be confident in the fact that this is your area of expertise, right? And these families are relying on you to make these expert recommendations, that's what will help minimize the overwhelm and the stress for them. So Easy Living, you guys have home care and you also have care management. And so I refer to an agency with your structure as a care management-led home care company. And I found over the years that that was really powerful in presenting it that way to referral sources. So do you guys find in your market that because you have in-house care management, that it's an advantage?
I mean, our market's so competitive. I would say, I think when having higher level, like preferred partnership discussions, I think it brings a lot of value. And the B2C side, I don't think it brings much value at all. 'Cause, sometimes you get the price sensitive shopper where they're like, you're going against maybe a 1099 shop versus a W-2 shop. So obviously they're going to be cheaper. When you're meeting with, I'd say like an administrator of a rehab and you're proving your outcomes that you can deliver, huge slam dunk. Because we can provide a higher level of touch points that I know our competition cannot because of our dual model. And then just kind of the margin support that that gives you. So we can be much more aggressive with our outcome-driven data because of the care managers on our team managing our clients at a much higher level than we do with our clients that don't have kind of both of our service lines to where you're more waiting on the caregiver to report up to you to where our care manager is much more proactive with, again, managing changes in conditions, again, preventing any problems that would arise, coordinating with physicians, alerting families, things of that nature.
Precisely. Care management is a proactive service, is what I've often told families. Sometimes, right, so we're talking about price sensitivity because obviously the cost for actual care management services is higher than caregiving services. But when I've been in conversations, we're going to go with the adult daughter and adult son, right? Just depends. The conversation usually, right, if there's that price sensitivity, taking some time to uncover, okay, well, how often are you having to buy a plane ticket, right, to fly into town because you're having to deal with your mom in and out of the hospital or there's some sort of crisis? Or how often are you having to call off from work and what's the impact of that? So on and so forth. Because I've found over the years that care management, it's an expensive service, but how much money can that adult child actually end up saving in the end? Because now they have an extension of them. So now they're not compromising their career. They're not having to, constantly buy plane tickets and flying to town. So it's really a matter of understanding, like, yes, you're going to pay for this service, but they're going to do all these tasks that you're having to take time off from work and travel constantly to do. So,
Exactly. It's knowing your customer. So like we know with our care management side, we kind of have a few customer segments where it is similar to home care, right? Like both of our customers are usually over the age of 80. There's usually health issues involved, chronic conditions, right? CHF, COPD, Parkinson's, dementia, so forth. But then you start breaking that down further, the adult child or adult, again, son, whatever, they usually live what I call like 2 hours or more away. So that's usually the trigger sign to where they can't get to visit mom maybe as frequently as they like due to their work schedule, family life schedule, or geographic location. So they would be a target care management client, or the ones that we're getting a lot of are elder orphans. So they're the last in their line, right? And they're usually managed by a trust or some level of a guardian or somebody, a friend who's become power of attorney, not realizing that that's a 24/7 job and they want to outsource that to care management. So it's just making sure that you target the right customer, and then price doesn't really come into play, right?
Exactly.
It's when you bring in the customer where, again, maybe the adult child's retired and lives with mom, care management isn't as a stress reliever as it is for somebody, again, who lives in New York and mom lives down here, and they really get the value at a much higher level.
Exactly. I've found really collaborating with the legal financial referral sources, right? They really enjoy if an agency has that care management service in addition to the home care. So, Alex, staffing, recruiting continues to be a hot topic. With IHCA, we did one of our performance masterminds, and based on the feedback, it seems what the members reported was that hiring is slowly picking up. Recruiting is starting to trend up a little bit, but there's still this big drop between applicants, right, and then actually getting them to show up for the interview. So is that something that you guys are still experiencing? And then what sort of measures do you have in place to address that, right? Applicants and then actually getting them to show up for the interview.
I think some of it is just associating that as a pain, which we don't do. We just embrace it as reality of the market. I think that's always been a challenge. Like retro thinking, it's like, man, I had no shows back in 2009, 10, 11. So is it a trigger point that causes stress? You should be numb to it at this point in time. It's kind of like what I tell our schedulers. Like, yes, you can feel like, again, you get a no call, no show, like that causes stress, but you should be able to take like two deep breaths and then you know what to do. You have a process. So you start executing the process that it kind of removes the emotion of things and you just kind of move to the next step. I see recruitment as a lot that way too. What I found is when we have that case that can give you 20 hours per week with competitive good pay, we don't have any problem staffing at all. Where we have challenges is always that chicken or the egg, right? So I always tell, like, we recently hired a new recruiter in our Tampa location. It's like we're building a bench for obviously if somebody gets COVID, we get that new case, you need that pool of care partners to call from. But you know from the get-go that they're going to leave you because you don't have work for them. So some of that's just the name of the game. And then when you do have that case, you call from that bench or you can pull from your recruitment pipeline and get them staffed on something right away. That speed still matters, right? Or they're going to find another job. So if you call that applicant on a Monday, you need to have orientation by a Wednesday or you're going to lose that care partner. They're going to go to another company. So it's constantly just managing that timing. And when it works out, it's great. It's fun. It's simple. When it doesn't, it causes some stress, but that's just the name of the game. The strategy that we found to be effective with that is I'm fine if you leave me because you're in our system and you're credentialed. So I'm going to re-recruit you. So again, as long as you didn't leave our organization because you had, again, like five no call, no shows, or you stole from a client, right? Something that's like a terminated offense. I'm going to re-recruit you because when I have that case, I'm going to call you back and say, hey, Sarah, I know things didn't work out 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 2 weeks ago, but we have this awesome new case. It's 3 miles from your house. It's 9 to 1. I can pay you 17 an hour. Is this something that you're interested in? More often than not, we get that filled and it's easy to reactivate you compared to going through the pipeline of applicant credentialing, qualifying, orientating, right? Like that takes time.
So is that the you mentioned, right? You're saying you'll re-recruit, you'll pick up the phone, you'll call and say, hey, we have a case for you. But are you doing anything else where you have an initiative where you're constantly your caregivers, right, that are inactive but eligible for rehire? Are you having any sort of method in which you're consistently staying in front of them up until the point where
Few
you do pick
different
up the
touch
phone call?
points. Like we try to get you involved with our social right away. so that we can at least use that as a touch point. We do monthly surveys. We try to do a lot of text messaging, just checking in. What's your availability? Are you happy with the client you're working for? I would say nothing that is like, oh, game changer. It's just the consistency of doing it day in and day out. And if you love consistency and you love doing that, like success will occur. So that's kind of like our core value number six is called like putting the effort to where if you just keep putting in that effort day in and day out, more often than not, success does occur. It's when you get kind of demoralized, like, oh, I hired three people and two of them aren't answering my phone calls. Well, they got work elsewhere. Like somebody beat you to it. It's not a negative. Stay in touch with them. When you have that right case, they'll probably come back to you as long as, again, you still offer competitive benefits, you offer competitive pay, you're a good company to work for. They will come back. So just
Consistency
keep moving
pays
forward.
off. I mean, if you compare it, right, to the efforts of a marketer for a home care company, right? You can't just go to a skilled nursing facility once or twice, right? And expect clients. So, just like a home care agency needs to market to referral partners, right, to get clients, there needs to be this consistent effort or staying in front of the care staff as part of the strategy.
I mean, more aggressive strategies we've done, which are like not the most fun to talk about, but who are your pain in the butt clients? When you get that new great client, ditch your pain in the butt ones and put that care partner on a better case. So you're strategically upgrading your clients at the same time that you should be able to upgrade your staff. And that's where we kind of do that too, to where if we're always recruiting, I kind of do the joke, which I was telling our new hire, her name's Juliet. I was like, Juliet, you're going to go through those weeks that we're not going to have any clients. Like, it's going to be slow, right? I'm like, that's when you need to keep recruiting because the next week you're going to get that 24, or that's when we're going to have personnel problems. And the way that we can hold our caregivers to a higher standard is by constantly having a pipeline to where, look, we'll coach, we'll train, we'll give feedback, we'll encourage, but that caregiver might need to change their behavior to raise to the company standard. But if they don't, they know that we can replace them with another caregiver pretty quickly because we offer great hours. And we offer great pay. So they know that they have that here too. So you gotta have your leverage points where you have them.
So are you doing anything specific? As I've been meeting with more and more agencies, right? The word of mouth referral, just like referral of a client, right? A referral from a caregiver that works for you, word of mouth, are very, very valuable. So do you guys do anything specific at Easy Living to encourage those word of mouth referrals from your caregivers?
We try to make it attainable. And what I mean by that is like easy. So you just refer us somebody and they pass through all of our credentials. We get them on a consistent case. You get $100 bonus. There's no work for 90 days, work for X amount of hours. It's immediate. And
Oh, so
it's
the
paid
referral.
off more often than not.
That's really interesting, Alex, because so what you're saying is you have a caregiver, they refer their friend to you, they get that $100 referral fee before that person that they referred even gets staffed on a case.
I try to get them on one case because I feel like that's our job, right? Like, again, if you referred me a friend, that's not your job to get them work. It's my job. So that shouldn't hurt your referral bonus. We've given out a few that way. Like, that's where the beauty of having like a biweekly payroll, I get like 2 weeks to make this right. So it's like everything's kind of 2 weeks in our world. It's like we got to catch it before billing or payroll. And I feel like that's the company's job, and you shouldn't hold that against your care partner when they've referred you somebody. Now, again, do people play the game and give you garbage? Yes, but I would say more often than not, when you have your relationship with that care partner, your good ones are giving you the good people, and you should have a case to put them on. Like, I think that's the big difference to where I communicate this with our recruiters all the time. Like, why are you bringing this person up? Like, are they to build the bench for when we get a new case, or if COVID hits and we lose a care partner for 2 weeks and we need to get more fill-in work? Or are you putting them on a consistent case? So our recruiters actually do that first schedule. Scheduling manages everything afterwards. So they manage if you need to change your Tuesday to a Wednesday, you're calling out, you're going to be 10 minutes late. Like, that's what scheduling does. Scheduling
So
will
you guys are
replace. The
ensuring.
first shift is with the recruiter because they have to know what they're hiring you for. Or you get a recruiter that just brings in 20 people a month and they think they're doing a great job, but then scheduling gets upset because the recruiter's bringing in nothing but garbage that never returns phone calls. So their incentives aren't aligned. So our recruiter is tied to our open hours, and that's what they're managed to, is reducing that. And then they're tied to what are you staffing consistently, because they should be hiring people for only two reasons. You're taking this client immediately because we haven't been doing our best work. We needed to recruit to find somebody to do weekends, or you're building a bench, and that's fine as long as your open hours is managed to a level that we hold like our team accountable to. But we know we're going to lose the bench, so I'm
Can
not
you
upset when
reiterate
that
that for
happens.
the audience? So your recruiter is not just recruit. I mean, there's
They
recruitment
do
to
the
fill the bench,
first
but they're
step.
recruiting for to lower the open hours, is what you're saying.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Because that's so we really manage our business off a few reports, but we use ClearCare. So what I do every single week, well, our team does, is we run what's called a percentage staff report. And we run it every week, and then we kind of stop it for the end of the month, and then we do obviously just red, yellow, and green. So green means we've been staffed consistently. So anything over 90%, we consider as staffed consistently. Anything less than 90 to 85 is yellow, like we're at risk. Anything less than 85%, we probably need to be re-recruiting for with a new caregiver because we're having challenges for whatever reason, whether that's caregiver being late, caregiver calling out. Because think about it, if you work a job Monday through Friday, you're out four times in a month, that's not good. Like you went an entire month without working a full work week. Now, again, your excuses can be legitimate, they can be illegitimate. It doesn't really matter, right? Like no job would keep you. So that's where kind of like if you're more than 90, you're probably out maybe just once a month, twice a month at max. And depending again, the amount of shifts, right? But you're probably consistent on that case to the standard that you're still delivering high quality care and your client's satisfied. If you're less than that, that means what we put them in is like a client's at risk of leaving our organization because we're not consistent enough. So that where when we run that report, our recruiter sees red, yellow, and green, and then let's review those reds and say, are these isolated occurrences or are they recurring? And then we'll just proactively replace you. So that's where our schedulers will coach during that month to get that caregiver up to performance standards. If they're not green by the end of the month, our recruiter knows that they have to find a new care partner for that client, and hopefully they're green for the future months and they're staffed consistently.
Am I understanding correctly? Because this is something that's been in conversations I've been having with owners. A lot of agencies, right, in their recruiting, their job flyers, it's we're hiring, we're hiring, we're hiring, right? But in your method, based on this report that you have, when you identify that you will have to rehire for a client, you're not just hiring, we're hiring caregivers. It's you're hiring for a specific job. Like you could even include verbiage like hiring for this case, companionship only, hiring for this case, you know, here's the location, here are the hours. So is it more specific job placement?
I call it A to A staffing. So that's what I really shoot for. Like that's what I try to reward our recruiter on, is like, hey, how many open hours did you knock off the board? How many people did you turn green? Like how consistent are we? So like system wide, we're at like 94% consistent rate, where we have the same schedulers, or excuse me, the same caregivers showing up to the same clients every single day and time.
That's
And
phenomenal.
yeah, so like I market that. So I'm like, hey, we have a 6% call out rate. Like again, we're doing 600, 700 shifts a week. Like that's not, again, I think that's fantastic. So I use that as a marketing tool. And that's what I want our recruiter focused on, because that's where I think recruitment has the biggest impact. Again, where I've always been frustrated with recruiters, they'll hit their monthly number. They'll bring in 20 people a month. But then you look at your turnover rates, then you look at where are those 20 working? They're not. So it's like, did you really move the needle? The
Because maybe
answer
they
is
didn't have the
no.
schedule to bring down those hours that you're talking about
Correct.
in your
So,
method.
like, the answer is no. So, there's always that fight between scheduling and recruiting. And what I've tried to do is just minimize that to where the recruiter's job is to staff that person that they're hiring on their first shift, and then scheduling will manage it going forward and help reduce that. I see the question that popped up there.
Yeah. So what report are you using?
So the report is in ClearCare, and it's a custom report that I then move to Excel to create a pivot table. So it's kind of a long-winded answer, but I'm just pulling it up in ClearCare right now, so bear with me a second. And I can give you the data points if you use ClearCare. So it's a we just call it our percentage staffed report, and the data point in a custom report is client location, which is just how we break down our three offices, but then client name and then status. And so that will show you if it's completed, canceled by caregiver, or canceled by client. So the way that we track our shifts is if a caregiver calls out, we cancel that shift by caregiver, and then we open a new shift and fill it with a new caregiver. So that record is always tracked in ClearCare. So then when we do like performance reviews and stuff like that, we could see how many times did you call out in a month, a year, 6 months. And then we can kind of see, hey, do you call out or do you not call out a lot? And that's how we do performance increases and things like that.
So there's a lot more tied to this specific report than just knowing if you have to rehire for a client, right? So there's all kinds of different
Correct.
things that you're using this report for. That
Yeah,
is
and
very
that's where I
interesting.
try to make home care simple. The foundation of what we do is being where you're supposed to be when you're supposed to be there. So, like, if we're solving that, if our caregiver forgets to take out the trash, if they don't give a bath the right way, they didn't do the laundry right, again, all the silly stuff that we get called for, I think that's all trainable. So, like, I tell our clients when we onboard them, I can have a caregiver that's been a caregiver for 20 years, but when they start you, it's a brand new job. So I usually try to ask the adult child, like, where do you work? And I always use banking as kind of my analogy to where, like, if you've worked at Bank of America for 20 years, you might be the best banker in the entire world. But if you join JP Morgan Chase, it's going to be new software. You have a new boss. You have new colleagues. There's new office culture. Like, will they perform at the same level that they did at their previous job? And that answer is no. So
Everything's
you
different with a
have to
client.
give
We're
our
learning.
caregivers a chance, right? The same thing with, like, they always laugh, like, when it comes to Hoyer lifts, I say it's a lot like driving a car. So I have a Tahoe. Yes, I have a driver's license. I know how to drive. But if you put me in a Tahoe versus stick shift 2-door car, I don't know how to drive stick shift. But I have a driver's license, so why can't you do the job? So I think it's kind of the same thing with caregiving, where we try to set those expectations with our clients up front that you have to be patient. And in home care, again, it's a much more controlled environment. There's less variables, but it takes about 2 weeks. So that's really what we shoot for with our clients, to give that caregiver a chance.
So to see that continuity, but to develop that rapport, that's the other thing. I mean, oftentimes, we do a good job in the industry of talking to the adult children or the well spouse about, it will take some time for your loved one to feel comfortable because we're introducing somebody into the home that they don't know. And we understand this, right? That whole conversation. You could have a professional caregiver that's been doing this job for 20 years, right? But still, they're going in and they're going to be interacting with somebody that they're just meeting for the first time, right? And so just as we support the fact and we support the family and understanding that it's awkward for the client for a bit of time, we need to assume that it could potentially be awkward for that caregiver too. And how can we best support to get that relationship as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I love explaining the why and then pinning the client. Like, I have a couple different analogies that I always use. Like, I love the driver's license one because everybody has a driver's license. So, like, it kind of relates. I like banking because that's usually, like, everybody knows that all banks kind of do the same thing. It's just a different brand. So I try to share those, and then I just try to really explain that why, because then they get it, right? So I try to relate it to what they do. Same thing goes, like, and I try to hit different scenarios, right? Like, if a caregiver goes through a client's house and is opening up all the drawers and the dresser, there are those clients that say, wow, they're snooping to steal from me. And then there's the caregiver view that says, I'm just looking to see where the shorts go. So it's just really explaining that we found non-compliance with a caregiver usually never has to do with their, like, lazy, so to speak, as much as they just didn't know where to take out the trash, so they didn't do it. And that's normal human behavior. So it's just setting those expectations up front, and then you'll get more consistent care on the back end.
Setting them up for success, right? And empowering them to continue to be
Yep, that's
successful.
core
And
value
that
number two
changes
here.
from client to client too. one caregiver can be super successful on one client and then really struggle on a different client because the personality dynamics are different, the needs are different, the family
we
dynamics.
We spend a lot of time with that with our schedulers. Like oftentimes, like they get burned by a caregiver and they're like, "Oh, she's dead to me now," and we're like, "No, there's love for her out there somewhere. We just got to find it." So
the
it's
right
like we're
fit.
not letting her go. Yeah, I mean, I'm a Tampa Bay Bucks fan. You know how many quarterbacks we've given away that have been like horrible here that have gone to win Super Bowls on other teams? It's like, it's not a good fit for whatever reason, but they'll be more successful in a different type of work environment for a different type of client. So I think some of that's like caused turnover problems within companies that I'm like, I'm not going to fire you for that. Like, I'm not going to have you go back to that client. But I'm going to find you a client that's maybe a better fit for you. Like we had one caregiver who is great, who just even at 9 o'clock, she couldn't be on time. So now we have her working 1 to 5s. So it's like we just had to keep pushing her hours back until we finally found something that worked for her. But she's a phenomenal caregiver when she showed up.
Do you guys so make a point in your agency to, when you have those call offs or this particular caregiver, you just found that like she can never be on time at 9, taking the time to ask why, or you have a caregiver that performed really well on one client, all of a sudden they're assigned to another client and they're not performing well, taking the time to ask why, because for example, maybe you have a caregiver who is capable of assisting with, toileting. But they don't like it, right? And so they just don't show up the same for those clients. But now you have that information to make sure that you're going to staff them, right, appropriately, where it's going to be a win-win for the client and for the caregiver. So you maintain them and everybody, right, is performing well. It's working for the agency.
Yeah, bingo. So we'll have in our notes, like, showed up late and why. It's like, oh, forgot to set the alarm, or the alarm wasn't set. Or another one, like she was in Orlando and had to work in Clearwater, like 2 hours away. Like, why would you do that if you had an 8 a.m. shift? Like, you're not getting up at 5 to drive 2 hours to make sure you're going to be to work on time. So it's like just being like, hey, having a conversation with her, giving her feedback, and then saying, how about a case at 1? And then we just kept giving her a couple different tries, right? Like, sometimes you get burned, like you lose a client because of that. But again, we know how hard it is to find caregivers. So it's like when you do bring them in, how do you make them work before you just jump the gun and say, you're dead to me, let's hire me more caregivers. So yeah. I think retention's more than just one avenue of like a culture, your office environment, like how do you treat them? It's an encompass of everything. Mm-hmm. And I just believe that there's love out there for everybody.
I like that.
When you find it. It's great. Like I've had some hard clients that were like on the verge of we're gonna fire you. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden caregiver's like, I don't mind it.
Yeah, like, oh, finding the right fit, okay. The customized matchmaking.
Ooh, yeah, then we live to see another day and we don't lose a client. This is fantastic.
Well, Alex, I really enjoyed this conversation. Before we log off, could you please share with the audience and then also for people that watch the recording, what areas you service again, and then how people can get in touch with your agency. I do encourage everybody watching and those that will watch the recording, be proactive in researching your care options for your loved ones. Don't wait for an emergency to happen. Just because your loved one may not need the care right now, there is absolutely no harm in reaching out to Easy Living Home Care and learning about their services so that way you are prepared when the time comes. So Alex, what areas do you serve and how can people contact you to learn more?
Yeah, Easy Living Services, the Tampa Bay market. So Pinellas, Pasco, and Hillsborough counties in west coast of Florida. If you want to reach out to us, you can go to easylivingfl.com. That's the best way to reach out to us. And then you fill out one of those contact us forms. They all go straight to my inbox so I can reply to you pretty quickly. And as I always like to say too, I mean, I'm 100% transparent in what we do here because I just feel like that's the best way to operate a business. And then I love telling folks what I can do. So be more than happy to have any questions like, hey, here's how I would solve that problem or here's how I would operate it from that standpoint. And if it works, great. And if not, we'll keep trying until we get it right.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest today, Alex. And thank you for being a member of IHCA. If you own an independent non-franchise caregiving agency and you'd like to learn more about membership and IHCA, you can learn more at www.indhca.org. Thank you so much and enjoy the rest of your day.